Yeah, so our conversation earlier, Gary, has prompted a lot of people to text and email me during the show about the bridge collapse. I don't know that any of them are structural engineers, but some of them have worked at VDOT here in Virginia. Some of them have worked in international trade. And
you talking about the conversation where neither one of us resemble an engineer?
Yes, yeah, where exactly. I acknowledge that. But yeah. I then offered my opinion.
Yeah. Which is what you do.
Yes. I'm not an engineer, nor do I know anything about moving product from point A to point B around the world. But let me tell you what I think. I try not to do that. And if I do offer an opinion, you know, and other talk show hosts don't do this, I acknowledge when I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I'll tell you right out, hey, this is not an informed opinion, but it's instinct from somebody who's watched a lot of scenarios play out, but I don't want to mislead you. And, you know, a lot of people are not, I feel like that's a positive thing to be candid with you, right? There are some things that I will claim to be an expert in. We start talking about political communications and press releases that present data and some international business. I think I could make a claim that I'm an expert in, but this is not one of those things. However, the emails that I've gotten from folks as the show has gone on this morning, because the first half hour we talked a lot about the bridge collapse and how long it's going to take to fix the bridge in Baltimore. And then, you know, one person who used to be a big deal in Virginia trade, I don't know that they ran the trade office if there is one, but they were a big deal with the trade deals that the state used to put together, said this is a disaster for Baltimore. You're not going to, you can't get a ship in and out of Baltimore Harbor. And how long will it take to clear the remnants of that bridge so that you can actually have a functional harbor again? That's a big deal. Of course, you know, thinking like a Democrat, I go, oh, a tragedy? How can I exploit that, right? Is there a way that Virginia, this is not nice, but it's practical. Is there something that Virginia can do, not to take advantage of this situation, but to help solve, the nice way to put it is, how to solve the problem? You know, our ports, do they become an option or more appealing given what has happened in Baltimore? And it's weird, and then maybe this leads us into our next guest for Holy Week. I've been talking to a series of pastors this week, and I promised I wouldn't hijack the show and turn Richmond's Morning News into a church service. I don't intend to do that. But, you know, it was weird yesterday. A lot of people seem very upset about the bridge collapse. Maybe it's because all of us, you know, at some point, whether you're on vacation or whether it's your commute, you cross a bridge. And I don't freak out about it, but I know some people who have real anxiety about crossing a bridge. And whenever there's an incident like this, where people lose their lives or something dramatic, like you look at that bridge, you think, that's never coming down. Look at that. That's amazing engineering. You just can't imagine that something like that is going to collapse out from under you. And you know, if you are unlucky enough to be on the bridge, you wind up dead. How horrible, right? Maybe the same thing when there's a shooting at a mall. You think, I go to the mall all the time. Could that be me one day? I guess it could be. And I think those moments have a lot of folks, or force them to think about their own mortality and their lives and their, you know, how much time they spend with their family versus how much time they fritter away on the internet or how much time they're working. Remember after 9/11, a lot of us had that realization. You know, if this was the end of the line, where would we be? And I've got to believe that yesterday and headed through this weekend, a lot of pastors will, in addition to their Easter message, will wind up having to talk to people about their anxiety about these types of issues. Matt Houle is with us. He's the lead pastor at the Mechanicsville Christian Center. And Matt, I appreciate you coming on. I haven't prepped you for this, so I don't know what your answer will be. Did you have any conversations with parishioners yesterday about the bridge collapse, or just about that type of, you know, at any moment the end could come? Are you ready for the end? And good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on. No, I did not have any yesterday, but certainly, like you're saying, things like this can create anxiety and stir up fears in people. And and so it's something we're always kind of addressing, you know, from time to time in messages. And I'm just kind of, you know, thinking about things that are temporary and things that are eternal, and just making sure that what is eternal, that we're ready in those areas, you know. And so, yeah, we're actually doing a series coming up in just a couple of weeks, starting one where we're going to be talking about mental health and anxiety, depression. Those things will be part of that conversation for a few weeks. And so, it's a big deal. Take it seriously, for sure.
I don't know how old you are, Matt, but do you think that mental health is for the average person is better or worse than it used to be? I mean, you know, we kind of look with nostalgia at the past and assume that everybody was holding it together. But gosh, I know so many people, they're kind of high functioning people. But when you really get to know them, they're struggling. You know, it doesn't mean they're bad people. They're just struggling in a lot of ways. What's your observation?
Yeah, I mean, all the stats have really skyrocketed over the last, you know, couple of decades when it comes to things like worry. Loneliness is a big deal. Isolation, certainly with, with a lot of the social media kind of increase and smartphones and all those things, a lot of people, especially young people, are lonely. They're isolated. Those things cause anxiety and depression. And so, those things are definitely on the rise in our society. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that.
All the places I've lived, in L.A. and New York, I couldn't do it when I was in the Middle East because there weren't churches that were available to me. I found some Christian friends to hang out with. But do you think that the modern church provides that sense of community that in the movies and, you know, when my grandparents talked about when they would move in the Navy and then winding up in Emporia, Virginia, the Baptist Church and the Episcopal Church were really anchors for their lives in smaller towns. Do you think the church still provides that?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the things we should do at least best. And so I think it's, and probably not every church is doing well at this, but, you know, I look at our own context. We have about 70% of our people are in a small group of some sort throughout the year. And so so they're connecting in circles. You know, we kind of say we can learn in rows, but we do community, we do life in circles. And so, we're seeing definitely a rise in the need for that that people are expressing, but also I think we're seeing people doing it, engaging in kind of a communal aspect of the church.
I think there's also, because I've encountered it a couple of times, people who look at the new church and the new ways that a lot of churches interact with the congregants, and they're skeptical. Yeah. I remember the church my parents were going to, the wonderful church out in the West End, and they added a coffee bar in the lobby. And my dad freaked out, like, wow, people shouldn't be coming to church because they want coffee. And I said, well, Dad, you know, it's kind of, that's a thing. People go get coffee now. So isn't that nice to offer people coffee? Maybe that'll make some new people come to the church. He was adamant that that was not why. And I'm not beating up on my deceased father, but it is interesting that I was seeing that as a way to lure people in and be friendly and presentable. And he almost saw it as an affront to the worship that's supposed to be going on in that setting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I get that. I think that, you know, for us, we do have coffee. We have donuts even. Okay. So we're even a step up from that.
I'll stop by on Sunday.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And but for us, like, we used to have bad coffee and no donuts. And we had a really meager, I would say, like, kind of foyer experience, you know. And people didn't hang out. They just kind of, like, came in, sat down, left. And we noticed when we got good coffee and we brought in some of these extra things that, man, people just hung out and they came in early. They had great conversations. And so, like you said, part of our function is to create a sense of family and togetherness. And so there's something about having a cup of coffee in your hand that helps people engage in just life together. And so so our foyer is loud and it's like people are just in great conversations before and after our services. And I think that's part of the reason why is we've provided an experience that is hospitable and something they can engage in, and maybe eating a little bit, drinking a little bit, but also having, you know, conversations that I think are really important. And I think that's part of what church is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we we do all those things.
I looking back, and you know, I went to Baylor University, so there were some hardcore Baptist, you know, kind of fire and brimstone pastors that I saw over the years in Waco, and I actually found it to be a very interesting cultural experience, but it was off-putting to me. Especially as I struggled with my sexuality, there were times I was like, "Oh my God, they just said I'm going to burn in hell. This is what do I do here? You know, this is very upset." I mean, I guess it was important to have that moral and emotional personal struggle and not just roll with your instincts and your feelings, but to actually work through it. I came to a conclusion that was different than I'm certain that the pastor would have wanted me to. But it seems to me fewer and fewer congregants want to be judged in church. And is that something that you struggle with? How do you share a message of biblical living or good living? I don't know that we want to go to the checklist of Leviticus, but how do you share that message without driving people off, given that they're no longer seem to be living in fear of burning in hell for eternity the way perhaps 100 years ago or 200 years ago someone would have?
Yeah, certainly. I think there's probably a few parts to this, but
that's a big topic for 2 hours.
So the message of the church obviously is Christ and Him crucified, and so this week, Easter week, is kind of the Super Bowl for us, you know, that He was crucified, dead, buried, but also raised from the dead, and that's kind of the historicity of this moment is a big part of what we're going to celebrate and talk about. And so we're going to preach Christ to people, that Christ loved them, that Christ gave His life for them, that He stood in their place on the cross, and that because of His sacrifice, we can be set free from the power of sin in our lives and even from the power of death eternally. And so that's kind of the thing that we are going to focus on. At the same time, there is truth in the scriptures, and we're going to preach those things, and we're going to do our best to do that in love and help people understand that God loves us, that He did give us standards to live by, and we're called to that place of holiness and righteousness, but that He loves us and gives us grace, you know, and that we say things like, you know, you can belong here before you behave, before you even believe, like you can be a part of this church and be loved and in the community. And then as you grow, we're just expecting that the Holy Spirit is going to change your life, you know, that you're going to change over time, and that those things that God's calling you to, you're going to step into those places.
You don't have to be perfect to get a seat in your church on the day you arrive.
Not.
I got you. Matt, I think I think a lot of people don't reflexively go to the church anymore when they're struggling, and I think that's probably a loss for us culturally. I personally would like to see more people look back over the millennia and try to find the eternal truths that would help them live better lives. And that's my point in having you on this week and spending some time talking about it. Matt Houle, the lead pastor at Mechanicsville Christian Church, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. It was a great time, man.
Thank you, man.
Have a great day.
Happy Easter.
God bless y'all.
Okay. 9:18. We're back with more in a moment on News Radio WRVA.